Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound, and welcome to your midpoint in the Memorial Day weekend. It's John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, today we're heading out to Coventry for a little radio field trip to the Nathan Hale Homestead to learn about this Connecticut hero whose patriotism and love of country was lost too soon. We'll talk about all the upcoming late spring and early summer activities going on, as well as the recently completed historic barn renovations, all happening at the Hale Homestead. Then we'll learn about a Hartford Regional Job Placement and Training Program that is seeking qualified young people looking for careers in the medical service, high-tech manufacturing, insurance, and financial fields, and hear from the students themselves about how their future is brightening for Connecticut's workforce. Then we'll close inviting you to hit the trails of Connecticut on Connecticut Trails Weekend. Our guests will cover a number of ways you can walk, run, bike, kayak, or even ride your horse while enjoying the hundreds of miles of trail systems our state has to offer. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this reminder. On June 7th, the Human Services Council is hosting its biggest fundraiser, the Sono Stroll. In its ninth year, the stroll has become HSC's biggest and most successful fundraiser. The Sono Stroll kicks off at 5:30 p.m. at Mora Mora on Washington Street in South Norwalk, with a cocktail reception along with live and silent auctions. And then following the reception, guests will enjoy three-course meals at one of the event's 10 participating Sono restaurants. Feeling hungry yet? Well, get your tickets now. Call 203-849-1111 or just visit hsccct.org.
Well, we are here on location today out in Coventry, Connecticut. Connecticut Landmarks preserves colonial Connecticut history at several homes across the state, including where we are right now at the Nathan Hale Homestead. The nonprofit organization has just completed a $1 million barn renovation that they'll unveil at a public celebration. And with me today to tell us about it is Anne Marie Sharlin. She's the site manager at the Nathan Hale Homestead here. So, Anne Marie, thanks for joining us on the program. And if you could first give us a little quick background about what you know about Connecticut Landmarks.
Connecticut Landmarks is the largest heritage organization in the state of Connecticut. We own 9 houses across the state of Connecticut, and we travel through many different decades of history.
So essentially, your paycheck comes from Connecticut Landmarks, and you're the Nathan Hale administrator, so to speak?
Absolutely, yes. I work here for the Nathan Hale Homestead, but we are owned by Connecticut Landmarks.
Okay. And this facility, is this open year-round, or is it seasonal?
It is seasonal. We are open May through the very end of October, and we do have some events in November.
Right. We were talking before we turned on the microphone, and I'm grappling for Nathan Hale trivia in my head, and you reminded me that as we stand here in a barn that was built on the homestead but never seen or touched by Nathan Hale, that he passed away in 1776 under extreme circumstances.
Yes, Nathan grew up here on this farm. He was raised here on this property. He was in the dairy barn, which is the larger, or the English, I'm so sorry, mm-hmm. the English, which is the largest of the two barns that we have here on site. He went off to school at the age of 14. He went to Yale. Mm-hmm. He became a school teacher, and then he joined the American Revolution, and he became a spy. He is actually known as America's first official spy. But he did not receive training, and he was captured on his first mission. But he is noted for his bravery. He stood up when no one else would, and his famous last words were, "I only regret that I have but one life to lose for my country."
So his father was quite wealthy.
Well, his father came from a very prominent family in Massachusetts, but he was not in the right spot in the birth order, so he was not going to inherit anything.
Oh, okay.
So he comes to Coventry, Connecticut, to find his own riches and his own wealth. And here at this farm, they had 12 children, 10 survived to adulthood, and Nathan was the middle child. Deacon Richard Hale, who was Nathan's father, had 8 boys, so he had free labor. Mm. And he becomes one of the 2 richest men in Coventry.
Oh, okay. And the home that folks can visit here at the Nathan Hale Homestead has many elements that are virtually as a visitor to the Hale Farm in the era it was built, we'll see.
Yes, we actually have many family artifacts. One of the siblings saved everything. There's one in every family. Joanna was the Hale that saved everything here. So we have many, many family artifacts. We also have a lot of the written history. Nathan's brother kept every letter, kept diaries. So we really know the history of the family.
Mm. And we know that you mentioned prior to our taping that now the Hale Homestead is availing itself to individuals and organizations that might want to have special events here, including weddings and things, which is really exciting. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But for folks that want to come up either with the family on their own, they can make a day of it because they could spend some time here at the homestead and then go off hiking because you've got quite a forest next door.
Yes, we have 17 acres that are Nathan Hale Homestead itself, but we are surrounded by 1,500 acres of state forest, and there are wonderful hiking trails all through the forest.
Great. So we're in the dairy barn.
Yes,
right,
we are
now
in the dairy barn,
which is actually, as you pointed out during a pre-interview tour, is in the process of being nearly outfitted for providing some catering support. There's a warming kitchen that's being prepared and integrated quite nicely into the historic elements of the barn. But this was one of the 2 barns that were recently renovated.
Yes, we have 2 barns here that have been renovated. The English barn was built in the 1750s. The dairy was built in the very early 1800s. So Nathan and his family were definitely in, the family was in both barns. Nathan was definitely in the larger barn. We have undergone a lot of renovations over the last year and a half. So that we can have weddings, if anyone wants to have family parties, corporations want to rent the space, we will be fitted with the capability to have programming on large screen TVs in each of mm-hmm. the barns. We had everything approved by the Connecticut Preservation mm-hmm. Society, so everything was approved. We need to say a special thank you to the state of Connecticut and SBM Charitable Foundation for making this all possible mm. for us.
So really, this is going to have both the authentic the authentic quality of what Nathan Hale and his family experienced, along with state-of-the-art outfitting for things like corporate conferences and team-building events and things like that.
Absolutely. It's old meets new. It is the facilities are absolutely beautiful mm. with new technology Great. Integrated.
Anne-Marie Sharland is site manager here at the Nathan Hale Homestead. It's at 2299 South Road.
South Street.
South Street. Oh, yeah. Don't go down South
Don't
Road.
Go down
You'll
South
just
Road.
Go down the wrong way. South 2299 South Street in Coventry and right off of Route 6, about 20 minutes or so from Hartford, driving eastward. And a beautiful, beautiful location driving into the estate. Really, you just suddenly pitch back in time in your mind. So... So this was quite a costly project, but you were able to get most of the work done for under about $1 million. And the public unveiling of this event is coming up June 11th.
Yes, June 11th at 10 a.m. We will have a ribbon cutting ceremony. We will have a flag raising ceremony during that time period. That is also the weekend's closest to Nathan's birthday. He would have been turning 262 on that weekend. So we will have a birthday party for Nathan as well. So that is Sunday, June 11th at 10 a.m., and I hope everybody will come out for the ceremony.
You're also going to be having a farmer's market. Is that a one-time only thing tied to the event, or is that something that will be ongoing after the unveiling and grand opening?
We have one of the largest farmer markets in the state of Connecticut here at Nathan Hale Homestead every Sunday from the first weekend in June right through the last weekend in October. It is quite an event. We have hundreds and hundreds of people to our property every weekend.
And but far from the only major event happening here. Why don't you walk us through a number of the cool activities that you're going to be having here at the Hale Homestead into and through the summer?
Well, starting June 10th, we have Connecticut Open House Day. People can come for a free tour of the homestead on that day. June 23rd, we have a fantastic new event for the homestead. It's called the Not-So-Good Life of a Colonial Goodwife. And we're going to discuss all of the taboo subjects, all of those things that you wonder about in history, but you're too polite to ask. So we're going to have that on June 23rd at 7 p.m. In July, we have the Colonial Camp. We actually have three Colonial Camps at three different properties here at Connecticut Landmarks. Mm-hmm. In July, we have the Nathan Hale Homestead for kids 8 to 12. They step back in time and spend the week doing all colonial activities. It's a great way for kids to put down the electronics and experience the outdoors with hands-on activities. We also have it at the Hempstead House in New London and the Phelps Hathaway in Suffield, Connecticut.
Mm. It was kind of interesting as I was walking up to your office and hearing some of the tour guides and docents talking to the numbers, a number of school groups that are here on the property today as we're recording this, and one of them actually saying, so today you would just take out your phone and do this, but back in the day, and then she was, you know, kind of time traveling back to how maybe somebody would look up some piece of information and go find it in a book somewhere or something like that. So I thought that was pretty interesting. As we stand here taping, we're looking out on a costumed, are they docents, tour guides?
Interpreters. History interpreters.
So, a bunch of young people lined up here, and it looks like there's going to be some sort of an activity involving young soldiers marching to the beat of a colonial drum.
Yes, right now you are looking at our 18th century soldiering program. He shows kids what an encampment would have been like, just how dirty the soldiers were, how many would have fit in a tent, and they learn to march and drill. We have an 18th century schoolhouse, and the kids learn just how strict school used to be. In April, May, and June, we have over 2,000 students visit the homestead from schools in Massachusetts and Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. And when we think of Nathan Hale losing his life at 21 years old, I imagine some of these older students who are practicing and participating right outside the doors of the dairy barn here are about the same age as may have been recruited into colonial service at the time, mid to late teens, right?
Yes, absolutely. I always find it fun to also point out to kids that he was leaving for Yale at the age of 14, and they think that that is just... it's just so out of their realm to that they would be leaving for university at that time period.
All their parents were thinking, oh, my God, the cost, the money I'm going to have to save so much faster. So there are also some events, if you don't mind, just kind of talking up a couple of the other properties as part of the Landmark series and a couple of activities that are happening for listeners elsewhere in the state.
Yes, we have at our Hempstead Houses in New London, we have Juneteenth coming up on June 10th. This commemorates the end of slavery. We have a very big, exciting event happening at our Bellamy Faraday House in Bethlehem. The Lilac Girls what is on the number one bestsellers list right now. Mm-hmm. And that is based on Caroline Faraday and her crusade to help the Holocaust and concentration camp survivors. We have Cocktails at Phelps Hathaway happening on June 23rd. And that is Cocktails. You get to have a great event. There's live music and cocktails. It's a wonderful evening. And on June 25th, we will be participating at all of our different homes for the Connecticut Historic Garden Days.
Fantastic. And there's one place that folks can go to learn about all of these exciting activities.
Yes, www.connecticutlandmarks.org. And if you're interested in any of the events here at Nathan Hale Homestead that we discussed today, the phone number is 860-742-6917.
Certainly one of the more beautiful locations and certainly a unique place, whether you're entertaining a corporate event, team building, school trip, family vacation, wedding, anniversary, all available for you at the Homestead. You can call our host this morning, Anne Marie Sharland, 860-742-6917, or learn about all of the activities happening at ctlandmarks.org. We want to thank our guests this morning for having us here at the Nathan Hale Homestead in Coventry. This nonprofit organization just completed their $1 million barn renovation that you heard will be unveiled in just a few weeks. We hope you can come out for that and make the Hale Homestead and hiking through the adjacent Nathan Hale Forest part of your summer here, part of your school curriculum, or perhaps a target on your calendar for a special event. Anne-Marie, thanks so much for having us.
Thank you so much for coming out, and I hope everybody will join us this summer.
Well, we're really excited to have a studio full of guests here this morning to talk about a critically important program in the greater Hartford area because there is opportunity in the program. We're talking about the Hartford Job Corps Center, and at the Hartford Job Corps, students receive the skills needed to succeed in today's workforce at no cost to them or their families. A number of those students are in the room with us. Including a medical assistant student, a student in the insurance program, and a student in the manufacturing program. So we're pleased to have them here with us, along with Linda Lopez, who's a technical training manager, and Gloria Ortiz Rivera, who's the outreach and admissions manager for the Hartford Job Corps Academy. So let's start with you, Gloria. Give us a little bit of background on the organization.
There are 127 Job Corps centers nationwide. There's two in the state of Connecticut. We're there. We're located. We're serving students 16 to 24 years old. We are offering trades in four different technical training areas. But the Job Corps program itself, the challenge that it has right now is the fact that we have open spots, and we definitely are looking to find opportunities, ways to share the program, share the fact that it is training. Successful careers that they can sign up for. They can learn, advance their education. They can live as part of a community on the campus. They can connect and network with employers, especially in the state of Connecticut. So the program, like I said before, does serve young adults, train them. We serve three types of students. We have students with high school diplomas that enroll in our program for free training, obtain the same credentials that they can get at a local community college. We have students that come into our program that for whatever reason or another did not finish high school, and so they're coming in to get a high school diploma. And then we have those that did not really finish their first year of college, and so they're kind of looking to kind of get their... Get back up again. So
tell us a little bit about qualifying or coming to the program for one of these open spots. What would an individual expect coming through the door in being one of those in being among one of those three scenarios that you just described?
Well, they first have to be considered low income. Those are part of the eligibility requirements. In the state of Connecticut, they have to be 17 in order to apply. In other states, they can be 16. Like I said, we are located all throughout the United States, but in 127 Job Corps centers. We have 3 centers in Puerto Rico, 2 in Hawaii, 1 in Alaska. And so we're fortunate enough to have many centers that students can choose from. However, they get to choose from a center in their local area. Mm-hmm. So again, in the state of Connecticut, 17, but not yet 25, they have to definitely consent to signing the automatic selective service registration. They have to be a United States citizen. And they have to need one or more of the following. Like, they have to either be a dropout requiring additional education or training, basic skills deficient. They can be homeless, runaway or foster child, or a parent. Those are some of the things that they can, you know, as far as eligibility requirements and the students that we serve.
Excellent. Well, before we meet some of these students, let's talk to one of their trainers. Linda Lopez is with us, a tech training manager for the Hartford Job Corps Academy. So how long have you been involved with the academy?
I've been at Job Corps for almost 7 years. In October, it'll be 7 years. But I've been the career technical training manager for almost 2.
And did you come to this position out of an education background or out of one of the fields that you conduct training in?
Well, after college, I started in the career placement field, and that's what I started at Job Corps with. So for the first 5 years of employment there, I helped, you know, network with employers and establish partnerships so that our students can go straight into employment once they were done with Job Corps. Mm.
Well, as we talked about before we went on mic this morning, we hear from folks in a lot of fields. We were talking specifically about manufacturing, but it is the same in medical fields, I imagine in the insurance industry as well, that there is a need for qualified individuals, and that's the role that you folks play at the academy, helping to fill those positions with great candidates like the ones that we have in the room. Tell us a little bit about what you're hearing from these employers a week, a month, 6 months, or a year or more after your students graduate into their employ.
Sure. Definitely with our manufacturing employers, we have strong partnerships, and they love our students. A lot of them take on our students as interns first, which help them to identify those strong work ethics before they even hire the individual. So when you follow up with them 6 months to a year, they're either still employed or they've been promoted. We have an employer that helps to send their manufacturing trainees, well, used to be trainees, off to school for further education, because the idea is that they don't stay in that entry-level position. We need to make room for more students to gain that entry-level position. So our students need to keep promoting themselves within the company. With our CNAs and CMAs, pretty much the same thing. They have internships and externships, so they usually get hired right from those positions. And then within our insurance program, students kind of venture out. You know, it focuses on insurance and financial services. But our students go into the banking field, they go to the insurance field, and some even go into the manufacturing field in the logistics department.
And you've been around long enough to probably see some of the earliest students that you encountered in the academy go on to some great things in terms of both status and rank in their fields.
Most certainly. Probably the most rewarding is when we have our career fairs twice a year. The representative for the specific employers are graduates of ours.
And to some extent, I got to imagine, aside from being the diplomats on behalf of the academy to the employers where they go, your students are also the best equal in value as recruiters to their peers and their friends and their neighbors, because there's got to be, folks in close proximity to these successful graduated students who are now in the workforce that are saying, hey, how can I get a piece of this action?
Definitely. The success of the student promotes the program. Whether they're graduates or current students, when they see their peers completing internships and getting hired and getting promoted and going to college, it starts to trickle down. And it helps other students realize that they have no other option but to thrive, because look at everyone around them. Mm. Everyone next to you is competition.
Very good. Well, we've gotten to the point in the program where we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and meet some of the students from the Training Academy. So stick with us. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the Event Guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People on this Memorial Day weekend, right after this news. Hey, who's hungry? Stepping Stones Museum for Children is nourishing kids' bodies and minds with food-focused events in June. First up is the Kids Food Festival on June 10th. Then on June 16th, everybody's favorite caterpillar eats its way through the pages of the very hungry caterpillar. And last but not least, dads will get a sweet treat of their own with free admission on Father's Day, June 18th. Want to know more? Get social with Stepping Stones on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or just hit steppingstonesmuseum.org on the web. Folks, if you're just tuning in, we're talking with the Hartford Job Corps Academy. We have both their outreach and admissions manager with us in studio, Gloria Ortiz Rivera. But now we want to hear the voices of the students that we're talking about. And we're going to start with our my good friend to my right, Isaiah Diaz. We talked a little bit beforehand, Isaiah, about the value of the training that you're getting in an industry where literally everybody that I talk to who's engaged in manufacturing, whether it's a frontline worker who's aging toward the end of their careers and wants to look for their protege to come in and pick up and do even better than them with youth and education, but also the owners and managers of these companies that are saying, we've got huge paychecks, fantastic environments to work in, vacations, benefits, lifelong career potential. What brought you to the academy? Tell us about your trip through the door for the first time.
Well, obviously, my name is Isaiah Diaz. I'm from the Harford County. I'm 18.
Also looking for a radio career as a backup, ladies out there who are listening.
Oh, yeah, the reason why I came to Hartford Job Corps was for a better future and a better outlook of how was, like, where I was at. Mm-hmm. I was basically in a standstill, attending high school, finding no interest, no benefit towards it, just receiving a piece of paper that say, hey, you finished 4 years, here you go, now get out that school. Yeah, basically, but I looked out and I received information about Job Corps, and I received phenomenal information saying that, hey, I'm here to support you and I'm here to get you to point A to point Z. They're not just here to get you somewhere and just be like, okay, you're better off just by yourself. Even after you complete the program, they're still at your door. Hey, how you doing? We just want to check up on you, you know, and so forth. And even if you have good terms, you could come back and work for them. So,
well, I was going to say one of the things that my colleagues and friends in manufacturing try to convey is that I guess the idea among people who don't know is that you have to be like a science or a math genius to be able to go into these fields and make a living out of it. But I imagine the academy has helped bring you to the place where you're completely functional and able to do the job.
Yeah, of course. I mean, personally, myself, I'm horrible at math. I could barely multiply. But as soon as I came to Job Corps, they helped me with my English and my multiplications and decimals, and they help you ready for the workforce. They just don't, you know, be like, all right, here's a machine, learn how to work it. They, you know, take step by step and allow you to, like, you know, really get familiar with all the decimals and everything. So they just don't, you know, expect you to learn off the bat. They help you with, you know, the progress and learning for it.
And where are you at in the program now?
Well, actually, I'm at 60%. I'm almost, you know, trying to get out the door. I'm actually, I have internships coming my way, and I'm actually getting certified in certain things. And yeah, I mean, it's just an experience that I'm loving it. It's a real good, you know, program that I love taking advantage of, and it's just, you know, it's not really the road. It's just, you know, how you get there.
Mm. Are you getting the idea that as you're looking toward that door, you're seeing this big long line of people standing there waiting to bid for your job and your employ? Because that's the way I'm hearing it.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And it's just, you know, they're just like, you know, they're always asking for more people in the manufacturing. And it's just, you know, like I work on a lathe and a milling machine.
Okay.
And recently I just hopped on a milling machine, and I'm just learning so many phenomenal things you could work on it. And I have a phenomenal instructor. He's just teaching me left and right things that I can't even imagine what you can make out of them.
Fantastic.
And yeah, we have a lot of machines there. We have lathe, milling, drill press, bandsaw, welding, and way more than you can even imagine.
Fantastic. Let's move on to insurance. Anil Pinto is with us in studio. He's in the insurance track at the Hartford Jobs Academy. Anil, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
So, obviously, Connecticut, insurance capital of the Hartford, insurance capital of the world. You're in the right place, I hope at the right time. Tell us a little bit about your experiences. Where are you in the program?
Right now, I just about hit 40%, I believe. And it's not a lot of work. But it's a lot of detail within my trade. So it's just, you have to be very, what's the word I can really say? You have to be focused, and you have to really apply yourself. Mm. And they do help you with a lot of extracurricular trainings and studying, testing.
So I was going to ask you, 6 months, a year before you came to the academy, did you envision yourself with a career in insurance or finance?
No. Before I came to Job Corps, I used to just like buy and sell sneakers. That was my thing. But I see more for myself. So high school wasn't really a thing for me. So I decided to come to Job Corps. And then they really just made me see more for myself.
Now, you're only 40% into the program. Are you getting an idea of a direction that you might want to go out the door into a career track for yourself?
Yes, sir. The staff here, they really helped me envision things that I've never thought I would really be doing. Hmm. Like Miss Gloria and Miss Lopez, they pushed me a lot to make sure I'm always focused and just make sure I do what I have to do just so I could complete and see more for myself. They believe in me more than I believe in myself sometimes.
Mm. And when you're, the fact that you you probably can't look around day or night and not see, huge buildings in the area that represent the insurance industry, it must give you a little bit of a good feeling that you're moving towards something that's got security, sustainability, and some degree of permanence.
Yes. I'm in an internship right now in the YMCA in the HR department, and it's like I think I found a fit because it's a lot of work, but it's comfortable and it's not too much that I can't handle, and it's everything that they taught me at Hartford Job Corps.
Yeah,
basically what I do on a daily basis.
Yeah, I guess the interesting thing too is coming out of retail, and which quite similarly, I was in footwear retail myself for several years. And it's you got to be a people person to do that. And if you're going into HR or thinking about it, then that's you've actually probably got a talent for it that maybe you didn't even know you had just by the way you're able to interact socially with people. So that's awesome.
Socially, yeah. I mean, I didn't really speak to people much, but now that I've got the internship, I speak to a lot of people, and it's more comfortable for me to interact more.
Great. Well, it's great to meet you, and thanks so much for coming in. Rose Ortiz is our last student guest, and she's in the medical assistant program. And Rose, you're outfitted. Are you working and still training, or are you into the career track at this point?
Well, we actually just started our medical assistant trade, and we're actually starting phlebotomy right now. So we are required to wear scrubs. Mm-hmm.
Well, tell me about how you came to the program.
Okay, so before coming to Job Corps, I was at, like Isaiah said, I was at a standstill. I have two kids, and I was seeing myself going in and out of part-time jobs, and it just wasn't meeting where I wanted to be for me and my kids. Mm. So I heard about Job Corps, and I came in, and they flooded me with so much security and so much support that it just made me feel comfortable and knowing that I was going to get something out of this program. So, I came in, and I started. I'm actually enrolled in my GED right now, so I'm taking my GED classes, and I'm also doing the medical assistant. We're going to actually be moving after phlebotomy. We're going to be doing EKG and CCMA kind of program, which is our final exam. Mm. And that's what's going to basically open the doors yeah. for so many broad opportunities, being that I'm in the medical assistant field. I can do so much with, you know, in different things, different jobs inside of this field, like phlebotomy.
Transportable anywhere, not right, just yeah. in the country. I mean, right. really, I like anywhere. Sure. Yeah. Now, in terms of that, when you came to the academy, did you have an idea that you wanted to go into some sort of medical arena profession, or did they qualify you or interview you and then you said, well, taking care of people is probably something you really
like to do? Well, I did. Prior to this, I even had a part-time job taking care of elderly. So I already knew I wanted to be in the medical field, but I didn't really envision myself actually moving forward with it. It was always just a part-time job, you know, and I never, like, moved forward to moving up in it. Mm. It was always like, okay, I'll take that, you know, as the job for now. And then if it didn't work out, then it just didn't work out. But when I came in here and I started my medical assistant, it's more like a permanent thing, and it makes me feel more secure about my future.
Mm. And you don't know where your future is going to take you, but you know that you have one.
Right.
Awesome. Great. Well, let's flip back to the boss here, Gloria Ortiz Rivera, of the Outreach and Admissions Manager at the Hartford Job Corps Academy. Great job, guys. So, Gloria, the last word, we've got about a minute or so, if you could just remind folks. And it is the program exclusively for Hartford residents, or it's regional?
It's so... The program is a national program.
Right. So for your offices, you serve what kind of geographical area?
Well, we are part of the New England Boston region.
Oh, okay.
So we serve all of New England, and students wanting to come to our center from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts.
But as far as folks that are listening on radio stations throughout Connecticut, there is a center that they are qualified to
absolutely.
Join somewhere.
All they have to do is call the 1-800 number. So anyone listening to us that want information, so if you're 16 to 24, you're listening to us, you want training in any of the fields from advanced manufacturing, automotive, to construction, financial, you know, in business, healthcare, hospitality, information technology, transportation, there's so many to choose from. All you have to do is call the 1-800-733-JOBS, J-O-B-S, 1-800-733-JOBS. And for employers that are listening to us, if you want to speak to one of our placement specialists, Job Corps is about job training young people. If they want folks to hire them, if they want information on how to, you know, create a pipeline into their manufacturing companies, into, you know, their offices, as Anil was talking about, or in the healthcare field, we have trained graduates that we work with for up to 12 months. Give us a call. And we have a local number that they can reach us at 1-860-952-1704, which is my direct line. Again, 860-952-1704. Or if, once again, they want information on the Job Corps program, they can call us 1-800-733-JOBS, 1-800-733-5627, or recruiting.jobcorps.gov.
Great. And folks, if you want to check this organization out on the web, maybe you are interested in learning more about what the Corps is all, and the Academy is all about before you approach them, you can go to hartford.jobcorps.gov. Hartford.jobcorps.gov. We want to thank our guests in this morning.
Thank you, John.
In studio for coming in. Gloria Ortiz Rivera, Linda Lopez, Rose Ortiz, Anil Pinto, and Isaiah Diaz. The future of Connecticut's workforce right here in the room with me. And great to have you guys. Well, I feel we should be walking while we're talking this morning, but we're in studio with a brand new friend to the award-winning For the People. Eric Hammerling is with us. He's executive director of the Connecticut Forest and Park Association. This week, they are the point organization coordinating with a national Trails Day for Connecticut Trails Weekend. That's coming up on the first weekend in June. Connecticut boasts the largest National Trails Day celebration in the country, with 200 plus free events happening over 2 days in over 130 towns across the state, thanks to the organization's efforts. And we want you to go out and enjoy them, maybe two or three of them, because many of them are in very close proximity. We're going to hear all about it from Eric. Eric, thanks for being part of the program.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
So first of all, a little bit about yourself and how this career found its way to you.
Yeah, oh, that's a great question. And it's funny, I normally get asked about the organization first, so thanks for asking about me personally. I've actually been involved in conservation work since 1990, when I started working right after college for a congressman who's doing environmental work. After a few years of doing policy work, I decided I needed a little bit more education. So I went back to graduate school, and ever since have been working in various nonprofit conservation organizations in Connecticut. Before coming to the Connecticut Forest and Park Association, I was the executive director of the Farmington River Watershed Association. And now very proud to be the head of CFPA. We have a staff of 11, and in addition to Connecticut Trails Day, which is the largest celebration of its kind happening anywhere in the country, we do lots of other things, from advocacy at the Capitol to we have land that we own and manage. We have the Blue Blaze Hiking Trail System, 825 miles of trails all around the state that we maintain with volunteers. So lots of different things, and just happy to be a part of it.
Well, it's obviously hiking is not a team sport, although a lot of people do it in groups, but it's also a thing that's, I think, enjoyed by a lot of individuals or couples and families. So it's probably a lot harder to gauge the popularity of the use of your facilities across the state, but it really seems like a ready-made 365 day a year opportunity for passive recreation, and just a great way to get to know some of the lesser known corners and beautiful places here in Connecticut.
That's absolutely true. And in fact, right behind our headquarters in Middlefield, we have about 3.5 miles of trails, a nice loop trail. On any given day, you'll see people either, walking their dogs, going for a nice run, recreating with a slow walk, with a picnic lunch. Yeah. And during the wintertime, we also see people out on snowshoes and cross-country skis. So, and obviously it's a wonderful thing that, all ages can participate in. And but that being said, you're right. It's hard to count the number of people who do it, but we hear from an awful lot that they enjoy it.
Well, from the canal series in central Connecticut to up Sleeping Giant or to the Hubline Tower in various corners of the state, it's a great opportunity. But also, I've noticed in recent years, hiking and the creation, maintenance, or expansion of trail systems, whether on formerly used rail beds or just around municipal parks or municipal facilities, it's becoming an attraction, if you will, or a destination, and municipalities and park and recreation departments and things like that are taking notice and developing and building and actually even creating new trail networks, which I imagine contributes to this incredible network we have.
Absolutely. And of course, we have the Blue Blaze Hiking Trails that have been built and expanding since 1929. And we do that with a great group of volunteers. We've also seen a number of communities that have really, as you said, expanded their trails because they've seen the studies that have been put out there. For example, a few years ago, the National Association of Builders, not known as a real conservation organization, did a poll of new home buyers and said, what are the things that you're looking for in a community? Right behind schools was access to trails. It was kind of a real surprise, but not to us. We know how many people enjoy having access in their communities. And we've also seen things like, home values actually increase when they have that extra access to trails.
So really a new age economic development driver for communities across the state of Connecticut. And as you started to sort of tick off the benefits to those communities, my attention turns to your website, which I invite folks to check out ahead of Connecticut Trails Weekend, the first weekend happened in June. It is ctwoodlands.org. And sustainability of your organization is something that must be close on the minds of you as the executive director and your cohorts as July 1st sort of begins to loom at us. And you did mention that government advocacy is part of the work that you do. How are things looking for this organization going into the new fiscal year, given the state budget situation?
Well, I want to emphasize that, you know, we are a nonprofit, private membership-based organization, so we're not a state organization, and thank goodness, because right now the state budget, as you know, is in a real, terrible crisis.
Well, certainly DEP cuts to forests and recreational areas have to encroach on the promotion of this broad network that we're talking about today.
Absolutely. Just this last week, they announced a deep, 12 layoffs of, park maintainers. One of the things that park maintainers do is maintain the trails that go through state parks. The Blue Blaze hiking trails that we maintain, many of them go through state lands. So we're, certainly concerned about how that's going to be maintained throughout the state. It hurts every time we lose someone who's dedicated to managing and protecting the outdoors.
Excellent. Folks, if you're just tuning in, Eric Hammerling is with us. He's executive director of the Connecticut Forest and Park Association. This year, his organization is looking to increase event participation for Connecticut Trails Weekend, the first weekend in June, and get more people and their families reconnected to the outdoors by hiking, walking, paddling, riding, or running on any one of the guided events that are happening that weekend. So let's turn our attention to that. Once again, ctwoodlands.org is the place to go. If you want to check out and get oriented to how you might want to spend Connecticut Trails Weekend, you can also get a look at the commemorative patch that you might take home if you're one of the lucky qualifiers. So, Eric, why don't you tell us, the fact that we're statewide in mind, hit us with something that's happening across the four quadrants of Connecticut so everybody can find something close to home.
Oh, sure. Well, you mentioned at the top of the show that there's, over 200 events. It is actually now up to 235 events in 130 towns. We only have 169 towns in Connecticut, so there is going to be an event near you. And if you went online whether you like it or not.
Get out there and hike, darn it.
So if you went online to the Trails Day directory, you would see there's a map right at the top, and you can kind of focus in to see where various things are. I'll mention a couple that are, one of the neat things is that in addition to the, more traditional events, walks, trail maintenance, bikes, runs, there are also some really creative ideas that have been put out there this year, which, one that just cracks me up every time I think about it is we're actually going to have, for the first time, a kazoo hike. At the Cacoponset State Forest.
Of course, it had to be there.
Right. and this is actually CFPA's great trail stewardship director, Claire Kane. She's going to be leading a walk and, along the way, playing the kazoo at a few key spots. It's going to be just a riot.
So it's not a bear avoidance exercise, really. It's just for fun.
No, just for fun. And actually, people don't have to worry about even bringing their own kazoo. We'll have, at least 50 on hand for folks to try out.
Excellent.
There's, a Native American history walk in the New London area that is, there's a group, Save Ocean Beach, who's trying to let more people know about Native American wild plant medicinal uses. And that's going to be one of the themes of that walk, which is really exciting. We have, for the first time ever, an overnight experience. Normally, it's just, an hour or two or three. But there's in Cornwall an overnight backpacking adventure on the Appalachian Trail that's going to be done this year. And You know, we think that's another exciting one.
Now, how about for our fans and participants in the equestrian arts? Some fantastic equestrian trails throughout the state. Where might you send some folks that might be listening this morning?
Yeah, actually, I'll bring you right back to the Cacoponset, one of our favorite state forests. There is a trail maintenance event happening there, which is folks from the Lower Connecticut River Valley Horse Club and the Bridle Path Conservancy have partnered up with CFPA and other organizations that are going to be working on a combination of different types of trails, including equestrian trails, to keep them kind of open and clear and mm-hmm. safe. So, that's the big one that comes to mind. Typically, there are, two or three equestrian events every year. But we're just excited that people who are equestrian enthusiasts are getting involved and yeah. getting out on the trails.
And I'm sure folks in that circle have social groups or social networking sites where they kind of cluster all these specific events as well. So folks with any special talent or interest can probably seek out specific events, not just for Connecticut Trails Weekend, but anytime. But the other one I wanted to touch upon, because it's becoming much more accessible and exciting, is cycling. Is there a place where folks can go where more advanced trails or off-road cyclists can get a little bit of a challenge while fledgling cyclists can still enjoy the experience?
You know, I'm not aware of an event this year that's specific to that, but mm-hmm. One of the nice things about the directory is you can go and actually filter all the different events by what type of activity. You can do it by whether it's a Saturday or a Sunday event. Mm-hmm. And, you could set it up alphabetically or by town. So it really, I guess we would never pretend to be the experts on all of the events, but say there's a lot of things that you could find that are going to meet your needs.
Okay. And I noticed paddling and kayaking is part of this. Yep. Does that infer that part of a trailway is actually underwater and you have to navigate it by a kayak?
Well, some say that, rivers are their own blue trails. Mm-hmm. There is at least one paddling event in the Lower Connecticut River area, which is, always a beautiful place to get out. One of the nice things about all of the events, paddling, equestrian, biking, hiking, et cetera, mm-hmm. is that each of the events is led by someone who's intimately familiar with that area. So you have people who have expertise that they're willing to share. Mm. Even though we know that no one has ever made it to all 200 events in a weekend,
sure.
You also have the directory to refer back to and, mm-hmm. and say, oh, here are some things that I could do beyond Trails Day weekend as well. Mm.
And given the fact that there's an expert, so to speak, that's tied to any one of these 200 events, I imagine another critical component, both from an educational standpoint and a sustainability standpoint, is going to be either a little or a big lesson on maintaining and protecting and preserving these trails.
That's right. We really hope that's one of the messages that gets through to folks. Trails are just not there. Even if historically a trail has been in a place for a long time, it takes, people to maintain it and make sure that it's going to be safe for future users. It also is really important to recognize that it takes landowners who are willing to host a trail and, allow people to have access to them. Many of the Blue Blazed hiking trails are not just on state land or town land or recreational water lands. Mm-hmm. They're on private lands owned individuals who are willing to make them available to the public. And that takes a special person, and we want to thank them.
Excellent. Well, we hope folks will come out and participate in the Connecticut Forest and Park Association's efforts here. Connecticut, as you may have heard, boasts the largest National Trails Day celebration in the country. So robust it is that it takes 2 days to cover the 200-plus free events, 230 as we count today on our taping, a couple of weeks ahead of that weekend. The first weekend in June, over 130 towns across Connecticut's 169 towns are participating thanks to efforts of the CFPA. Volunteer groups and individuals are hosting these events, which include hiking, biking, horseback riding, running, trail maintenance, kayaking, educational walks, bird watching, letterboxing, and all other kinds of stuff. Kazooing. I mean, we cannot forget the kazooing.
Don't forget kazooing.
Right. So we hope you'll come. And don't forget, if you do participate, you may be able to receive a free 2017 Connecticut Trails Day commemorative patch, a bonus item that's available to the first 500 respondents. So if you'd like to find out more about that, take a look at the patch or plan your Connecticut Trails weekend or a trail experience for every weekend throughout the rest of the year and beyond. You can go to ctwoodlands.org. I really want to thank you, Eric Hammerling. Great to meet you with the Connecticut Forest and Park Association, working hard to sustain and preserve and grow our robust trails network here in Connecticut. A great place to go to enjoy some peace and quiet, some passive recreation. We hope you'll head out and enjoy Connecticut Trails Weekend and Connecticut Trails 365 days a year.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.vocat@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Vocat, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.